welcome to the Anime That Didn't Make Us, a podcast about anime that we could have been nostalgic for, if not for the curse of geography. Joining us to pick an anime that they never got a chance to see when they were in their formative years, it's Dwayne Maloney.
Hello.
Hello, Dwayne. Dwayne has done us a solid here and stepped into the guest chair because of various busyness, and we're about to like go on a whole month of us not being able to organise a podcast between the pair of us.
Is it?
It is, because you're away next weekend, aren't you? I'm away the following weekend. And then it's the bank holiday weekend. And then it's September.
Oh, God.
And everyone's back to school. Hooray!
I tell you what, I wish I was back.
Well, they put the blooming back to school stuff out, like, the day before the breakup now, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like it was like a month or so ago. It must have been easy, yeah.
I used to hate that as a kid. Like, you just finished school, and then you're already seeing back to school, and that's like a terrible graffiti. You know what I mean? It's like a brick wall with yellow text, back to school, and it's trying to sell pencil cases. And...
Yeah.
But for you, it's more so the men kind of go like, you'll be back.
Oh,
they always come back.
Oh, I. I'm anxious in case I'm back in September and I don't realize.
I'll see if I get the back to school, but there's an exam, but you forgot to wear shoes, dream. That kind of thing. We'll see what happens, yeah.
So, our choices for this episode are Lupin the Third, Part 3, Romance of the Three Kingdoms, and Martian Successor Nadesco. And we start, as we always do, until I find someone older than me, is Lupin the Third, Part 3, my choice. Excuse me, losing my voice already. Not a good sign. Originally a manga by Monkey Punch that began in 1967, Lupin the Third is Lupin the fucking Third.
Who?
I've never heard of this. Is this new?
It originally had a pilot anime film in 1967, a TV series in 71, followed by a more successful series in 1977. That went on to spawn two feature films. But the one we're talking about today is Part 3, the one that all through my early anime fandom I was told was the bad one.
Whoa, who by?
Well, just like accepted knowledge of like the gatekeepers of anime at the time, I think.
I think I get why, because I think our main exposure to it was when we were rewatching like a Lupin Part 5, Part 2, where they were doing all the different jackets.
Yeah.
They did one pink jacket, Lupin, I think. Was it two episodes?
Just one pink jacket episode, yeah.
Yeah. Is it not liked because it's the silly one?
I think it's the one which is like, has like a much more variable style because it doesn't really have a overall director. I think generally we're allowed to do what they wanted on each episode.
Again, that doesn't sound like a bad thing.
No.
this didn't seem silly at all.
No, this is, that's why we get to this episode when we start talking about it. I do, yeah, that is definitely a thing. And, well, I've got more preamble patter that I've pre-written.
Oh, sorry. I know.
Go for it. I keep interrupting. Sorry.
I'm stealing it.
So, but that, in the 21st century, that has generally been, reversed because various people have stood up for it, including friend of the show, Aaron Long. And, its reputation has been, rehabilitated somewhat to the point where, yes, you've had a spot in the most recent Lupin show where they did a tribute episode, to this particular series. So this series aired on Yomiuri Telecasting Corporation for 50 episodes between 84 and 85, sometimes weekly, but sometimes not. I think there's like a 3-month gap between the 49th and 50th episode.
Is that like a season thing or just like a production problem?
I don't know. Haven't looked any further because I'm sure Lupin podcasts that would... greater detail than I would on, based on like, 4 days advanced knowledge that we were doing the podcast. So, yes, it was followed by a feature film, Gold of Babylon. There was a contract dispute influenced OVA, which has a different set of cast members. Multiple TV movies, the occasional feature film, the survival of the franchise following the death of its lead, crossovers Detective Conan, more OVAs, spin-offs, recasting of everyone but Jigen. It's had a part 4 TV series in 2015, a part 5 TV series in 2018. Monkey Punch died this very year. I can't find the interview. But there was definitely an interview where he said he wanted it to be like Spider-Man, where the character can endure multiple versions of him existing and will go on after his death. As proven by the upcoming CG film, a CG feature film. And all those things did not necessarily happen in the order, I just read them out. And there was live action stuff in there as well. And if you are in the right region of the world, you can watch part 3 on Crunchyroll. And if you can pretend that you're in the right region of the world, you could also watch part 3 on Crunchyroll.
What a time to be alive.
And it originally aired on Saturday, March the 3rd in 1984. But what was I watching on that day? Well, here are the things I probably watched on BBC, taken from the BBC Genome. Because unfortunately, I would have to go to the British Library every time we did one if I wanted to find out what ITV was showing. Saturday Superstore, where the guests were Dr. Hook, Shaking Stevens, and Bananarama. It's not quite as bad as last time we had Saturday Superstore come up, in that I think at least, I know kids would have been interested in Shaking Stevens and Bananarama, but I think last time I could not imagine kids being interested in any of the bands they had on. Less so Dr. Hook. I had no recollection that they had like a gardening segment. So they had Roddy Llewellyn showing you how to make an incredibly small garden. I assume that was like some sort of bonsai type situation.
See, I thought kids would love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think I would have liked that ability to have that little spot in the garden.
I think certain kids would, yes. But not this kid.
Fair enough.
And they also had a sports slot where the guest was darts player Bobby George.
Oh, Bobby George. He stuck a fly to a dartboard with a dart. There's a bit of trivia there. So apparently there was a fly in the room they were playing darts in, and he said, "Watch this." And he threw the dart and stuck it to the dartboard.
That's some kung fu shit, man.
Honestly, I'm not making this up. Unless the person who told me made it up. But there's a thing where he did something along those lines. So, there you go.
Then in the evening, we would have been watching the Rod Hull and Emu Show with guests Barbara Dixon, David Grant, and I think they're an Italian orchestra, Rondo Veneziano. And apparently this was filmed in the Real Sun Center, which is like some sort of swimming pool center in Real, based on the photos.
It was cheap, okay.
Are you aware of Rod Hull and Emu?
I know who Emu is.
Yeah, Rod Hull.
I gather the person who he's with is the Rod Hull person.
Yes. His manager, yeah.
His manager. But I don't know who the other people are. Like
Barbara Dixon's like a musical singer. She'd often show up on the two Ronnies singing a song. David Grant is also a singer. The name rings a bell, but not much more than that. I was like, that is a name I recognise. I can't remember what for. Then I looked him up and it said singer. Then, and as unfortunate reoccurrence, as we look back to 1984, Jim Will Fix It.
Yeah.
Followed by The Laughter Show with Les Dennis and Dustin G, plus Roy J, the Slither Hither Spook Spook Man.
That sounds scary enough. If it was intended to be scary, I don't know.
He's a magician. He's not a magician, no.
He looks like one.
Yeah, he looks like one. Yeah.
He's got gloves on.
That's an insult. You look like a stage magician.
He was a guy who would dance and prance around the stage wearing a comedy convict's uniform, i.e. the one with like arrows all over it.
Yes.
And gloves. And he'd like present himself like, how I'd say, like side on, and then turn his head quickly to the audience. And he'd say things like slither and spook a lot.
But dear, that's an act.
That is an act. He also advertised Schweppes lemonade at one point.
I thought it was going to be more the character than
well, I believe
turning around quickly.
If you look up, there's a clip on YouTube where Bob Monkhouse is introducing him on one of Bob Monkhouse's shows, and I believe the description is that. Yeah, he was kind of exposed on this program as not having much to his act beyond what we'd already seen on Bob Monkhouse. Now, that being said, when I was, how old will I be here? 8 years old, I thought it was fucking hilarious.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And watching the Bob Monkhouse clip, there are some good gags in that, and the delivery is really weird. But yes, you probably can only do it like once a year on TV. You can't do it 4 weeks in succession as he was doing here.
Hmm. I mean, I've got it on in the background, and it feels like the kindest thing someone's dad would do at a party. Right. And then all the mums and dads would be like, oh, it's Roy Spook. It's so weird.
It is, yes.
Like, it's so simple.
I loved it at the time. It blew my mind as an 8 year old. Because it's not like proper stand-up comedy, and yet the jokes are just standard stand-up comedy.
Hmm. I guess he got the gimmick, you know.
Yeah, but there's not much more to it than him jumping, saying spook, and slithering around the stage.
I can't stop watching it. I can't stop.
There's a line in his act that I still do say to the day, which is like, you'll all be doing it when he's doing something weird. I'm sure I've said that in panels after a particularly weird clip. You'll all be doing it. Or,
oh, right.
Or you'll all be doing it tomorrow or something. I think it's like that.
Yeah, yeah.
God, maybe like people's dads hopped onto this guy and they're actually taking his game.
Yeah, they might be. And then that was followed by the action film, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Which was like a weird, I don't know whether it was billed that way on the TV, but it was billed that way in the Radio Times.
Oh, so it was prefaced with the action film.
Yes, to let you know what you were getting.
Probably film.
It is a great film. I bet the dads were super happy. They'd just seen Roy J. the Slither Hither Spook Spook Man, and how they're going to get to watch Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
I got some Ace material and Cowboys, fucking A.
You ask any grown man, what were you doing March 3rd, 84? The list is.
The UK number one at this time was 99 Red Balloons by Nina.
Nice.
Good song.
Really good.
Then we come to our main events. Let's quick check in to find out how old our other hosts are today. Anthony, still not born?
No, I'm not around.
Dwayne?
Wait, what year are we?
It's March 1984.
Oh, no, I'm alive. Just about.
Just about.
Not alive enough to be watching telly and understand what's happening, but alive, certainly, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you would be nowadays. You'd be watching some sort of weird YouTube algorithm.
Oh, God, yeah. Spider-Man and Elsa do whatever, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I should look up to see if... I know there's, like, some weird, like, Anpan Man ones. I'm sure there's probably some Doraemon ones, but...
Yeah, probably.
So, episode one of Lupin the Third, Part 3. The gold is beckoning in Lupin. Screenplay by Atsushi Yamatoya, hot off Lupin the Third Part 2. Storyboard, episode director, character designer is Yuzo Aoki, who also worked on some other Monkey Punch stuff, such as Alice, which is an OVA that I do have. We may when we run short of everything else to watch, we may watch it for the podcast. And he also did the character designs for First Human Geatrus, the early 70s caveman show. And animation director for this episode is Shingo Araki. Probably know him from Heathcliff and Inspector Gadget and so many major shows, particularly of the 80s, that we'd be here all day listing them. But okay. I always reckon he was like one of the names I did recognize. I think that was because Heathcliff and Inspector Gadget used to be on quite a lot at the same time in my life. And I was like, oh, well, this is very similar to one or the other. And then you notice that name and you go, ah, I see why. It's all getting pieced together. Our Lupin is still the original, well, the most famous Lupin, Yasuo Yamada. Fujiko is Aiko Masuyama. Jigen is Kiyoshi Kobayashi, as he still is to this day.
Long may he reign.
Yes. Goemon is Makio Inoue. And Zenigata is Goro Naya. And they are joined in this episode by Kosei Tomita playing Shinkai, who is better known for being Shunsaku Ban in a lot of Tezuka adaptations. He plays whatever that character is playing in that story. He is the voice of Dr. Hell, and we just saw him as the narrator on Vifam. We've got a baby Norio Wakamoto as, was it Starbo or Starmo?
Baby. Star Mole.
I think that's right. Yeah. Apparently named after Tuna. Who you may know as the voice of Chiyo's dad from Azumanga Daioh and various other characters who sound like Chiyo's dad. He did not have that voice here though. He was not doing the Norio Wakamoto voice in 1984. And the truck driver is played by Banjo Ginga, who recently me and Dwayne have seen as Nanashi in Kitaro. He went on to play Jigen in the aforementioned contractual disputed OVA, Fuma Clan, and he's also the voice of Liquid Snake.
Cool.
Again, probably would not know from his performance as the truck driver here. And we open with our new opening theme. These are still Yuji Ono compositions, but this is Sexy Adventure, performed by Yusuke Nakamura. So what do you think of the opening theme, guys?
It's not the same as what I'm used to. It didn't have the same thing. No, it was fine.
I liked it, you know, just good, a good number, like, catchy and, like, again, it's just doing all the characters doing their cool things in the opening. What more do you need?
Yeah. I like the bit where it looks like he's a skeleton and then Lupin, it's just a mask.
I scared you there.
Yeah.
So we open with Lupin surfing. He's having a great old time of it, which reminded me of the start of when we first see Lupin in the Goodbye Partner that we just watched, where he's playing around on the beach with those big inflatables.
I do like it's like from lit from behind. He's only in shadow, but you can tell it's Lupin as soon as you see the bow-legged walking.
Yes. Oh, I've started watching that live-action Zenigata movie. And the guy playing him does the bow-legged walk. It's great.
How? How do you walk like that? I want to see that.
Is it any good?
Of the few minutes I've watched so far, yeah, it's pretty enjoyable.
Okay.
Then the shark approaches, with a telephone, a gold telephone in his mouth. Which I guess is the first sign that this isn't your dad's Lupin. except that he undercuts it in that it's all been kind of like a dream and he's actually in bed and it was the phone in the hotel room that he's in.
So he answered the real phone, but in his dream.
Yes. And apparently, Fujiko's in San Francisco and needs his help, and it involves Al Capone's gold ingots. This is presumably not our world's Al Capone, because this one apparently lived in 1971 rather than dying of syphilis in the 40s. And apparently he'd hidden a gold ingot, and the clue to its location is on 5 tiles he made while imprisoned at Alcatraz.
And did he actually go to prison in Alcatraz?
I didn't go that far. I just knew that he didn't make it to 1971. So yeah, a triad boss, called Chinkai has got the other tiles. Fujiko's got, is it three of them?
Three, I think. Three,
yes, because they both think they've got three, yeah. And then Zenigata shows up in a brand new car, get a big old car chase, they pull into a
giant burger.
Yeah, it's not a drive-through, it's like a drive into the restaurant and then reverse back out of it, which is I guess San Francisco, they're caught for space,
They all refer to San Francisco as Frisco as well. Is that a thing?
they're much cooler than me, yes.
I didn't know if anybody if that's what people called it or did call it. Frisco.
Yeah.
I like it.
Lupin, he gets caught by, this sort of independent gangster. He refers to himself as an outlaw called Starmo, who's trying to get some money off our unfortunate Chinese racist stereotype. That's always a danger when you're watching a Monkey Punch thing, is that? A Fu Manchu type is going to show up at any second. And so he's trying to scare Lupin into telling him, where the tiles are, what the deal with the tiles, tiles are. He does this by pushing him out the car that he's, so basically Fujiko gets kidnapped by the triads. Because
on the police chase, the police make a Blues Brothers type stack of police cars to stop Lupin, on purpose. I was just like, why would you? All right, fair enough. Lupin flips the car over. He flips the car over, and Fujiko gets caught in a giant butterfly net.
Yes.
And initially, I thought that was the cops or Zenigata or something. I was like, nope, completely separate crowd. And
again,
Lupin gets picked up by
Once again, proving the undeniable influence on anime of the Blues Brothers. I kind of think that it may be more influential than Blade Runner, in terms of the amount of direct references people make to it. And so Starbo's got a grenade launcher type, mortar type, rocket device. As well, which blows the car up.
He's got explosives that are very specific. He just blows Lupin and Fujiko out of the car.
Yes.
Not killing them because he needs them alive. And also, besides shoving Lupin's head out the thing, saying he's going to take it off with a truck, he's got a bomb strapped to Lupin's back that will only blow up his guts.
Yes.
It won't damage him at all. It's a very specific amount of nitroglycerin or whatever.
When he gets pushed out to try and hit the truck, Lupin manages to get rid of the handcuffs that Zenigata had put on him, and Starmo's gun, and attached a picture of Starmo,
he has written a very specific note on, yeah.
Yes. So when Starmo, because they go flying into the river, and Starmo climbs out, and then the truck driver's there with all this information that Lupin had given him. So, this guy is Lupin in disguise.
So he finds a gun and some handcuffs and a picture saying, this is Lupin's disguise. And if you shoot him, you'll get $1 million. And the truck driver just goes all right, fuck it, I'm down.
I'm surprised he would shoot him.
I assume it's described on the note, shoot Lupin and you'll get some
money.
Or something that. Or maybe the truck driver misinterpreted the instructions.
I mean, he may be dead or alive at this point.
Yeah.
So Lupin's still in the car seat with the bomb attached to it, and Jigen has to.
He's nipping his back against the back of the chairs not to move, and he's driving over barrels and stuff, they're speed bumps.
Yes.
Not they're barrels.
Meanwhile, Fujiko is being stripped, searched to find the other tiles, but she says she hasn't
got
them.
And this is why I couldn't watch it as a kid.
You'd
have just seen it come out, be like, right, that's going off.
Not because you didn't want to watch it, because you wanted to get caught watching it.
Yeah, you don't know who's going to pop their head in the door.
See, they kept it tastefully covered up until the point where they just stopped. Fuck it.
Well, they're all, it's like, you see the shape of the nipple, but it's skin tone, so it doesn't You still have to
cover over the shape, I think. I think that's the
yeah, point. That's the key that they didn't care.
Yeah, to. So they throw her in a pit, and they go chuck a snake in, and she screams, and the snake gets scared and goes back in the basket, which is a pretty good gag. Because the snake
it's a very cartoony snake.
Yeah, it was the least scary looking snake to begin with.
Yeah.
And Goemon, we see him like slicing stuff up, and then he breaks into the Trion space, and then we realize when we go back outside is there's what are they called? It's like a tram. Did they call them street?
Tram.
Is that the street? Yeah. What streetcar?
Trolley.
Yes. So he's cut a new path for San Francisco's famous trolley.
Oh, that's how they did that.
Yeah, he's cut like tracks into the ground. If that makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, that makes so much more sense now, how that worked. I just accepted it.
No, because it's a really good use of Goemon.
Hmm.
And we got, this is
and
like
a really good use of San Francisco as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They threw a electric toaster in the pit of water.
Was that a toaster? I thought it was some kind of transformer or something.
It could be.
It was generating electricity. I initially thought he was just going to throw the wires in, but he throws the whole device in.
But it didn't work very well, because when they themselves fell into the electrified water, they were fine.
Well, they remained electrocuted for quite some time afterwards. Electricity works differently, I guess.
In Frisco it does, yeah. Mm.
So the gang head off to Alcatraz, and they find the other tiles are there. They're followed by Shinkai and Starmo and five other guys with assorted weaponry. But they manage to take care of them by using a bunch of inflatable decoys. And so they end up falling down a pit again.
You need to tell them how they work out which tiles are the correct tiles rather than...
How was that? I can't remember now.
It was Al Capone's prisoner number, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He was using the numbers as directions from the missing tile to which the other tiles
had. Yeah, because it turned out that Fujikawa got 3, Shinkai got 3, but only one of them was real. The other 3 were fakes.
Hmm.
So Starmo still manages to get out of the gas-filled hole they were put in, but gets shot by Jigen for his troubles, but this being... 84 Jigen, who's a lot happier than most other Jigens. He just shoots him through the perm and gives him a bullet haircut.
I like this style of Jigen. I like him when he doesn't have the big hair. I like it's like slick back.
It's the same Jigen. It's literally the same Jigen.
I like it when the stuff we watched recently, it's always this big like plume of hair underneath the hat, whereas this looks like very slick back, he's younger, and
that was
I prefer that.
Yeah, if you go to Wave Motion Cannon's blog, they've translated a bunch of interviews from around this time with Yuzo Aoki, and he says he was trying to go for a younger. He didn't want he didn't want them to feel like old men.
Mm. No.
So he says specifically that with Jigen is that he generally keeps the hat further back on his head. So he's not.
Well, happily shows his face,
yes,
doesn't he? Which
yeah.
Seems out of like character from what I'm used to, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Like you say, it comes across as a bit younger, a bit more. And again, he's not quite as deadly as well. Just giving your man a haircut rather than straight up killing him, as most Jigens would.
I mean, even Goemon's got a different. Like,
yeah.
He looks more pleasant, I want to say. He's less moody.
It's like apart from Fujiko, they're all a little closer to the Shin Lupin comic designs.
Hmm.
Yeah, he's a much more handsome Goemon in this one.
I think it's less scowly, I think, is what's doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's got like a much more heroic jawline as well.
Hmm.
The message is, say, was it like the North of the Golden Gate?
The north foot of the Golden Gate.
North foot, that's
like
it, yeah.
Oh, I didn't see them say foot. So when they do the bit that they do, I was like, why are they doing that. I just thought it meant at the top of the tower of the...
Yeah, I think annoyingly they say it says foot on the tiles, but then they don't say it in the dialogue. Yeah.
Oh, right. Mm. That makes sense.
And then they dive into it and we never see them get the ingot.
Well, we saw all light. The good parts, I guess, so, yeah.
Yes. You see a shiny gold light.
And when I saw Goemon just sitting, standing on top of the Golden Gate Bridge, I was like, is he going to have to slice the Golden Gate Bridge over to
Oh, my God. Yeah. That would be good.
This episode, obviously it's Lupin, so the baseline is I liked it. But it feels like they were like trying to keep it generally within the tone of part two, so it wasn't super alienating.
Right.
Compared to some of the later episodes. I like the theme tune. I like the way it gets reprised in like dramatic moments, like a different arrangement. I like the new character designs, even though, yeah, those won't be in all of the episodes. There'll be other new character designs in some of the other episodes. But, it's an evolving thing is, Lupin the Third Part 3. But yeah, it's, good, bog standard, Lupin the Third.
Oh, it's not bog standard. Well, it's better than, I thought it was way better than bog standard. I like the simplicity of the story, and I think I'd prefer to watch a non, like a story that isn't a continuing arc. I prefer the episodic Lupin stuff, I think. Compared to what the, like part four, what I watched. I liked this way more than I thought I was going to do. And I would definitely have watched it as a kid.
But then stopped watching as soon as you saw boobs.
Well, I don't think I would have had much choice. Then again, I think I'd probably have not really, I would have noticed it, but I was old enough to kind of, like young enough to maybe laugh at it, but not to cause a big stir about it. You know, you know what I mean?
It's I like, do, I just, your euphemism was...
What? What is that? I don't know if you recognise what I said.
I know what you mean, because I was wondering, like, earlier this week, I was like, is it like 8, because generally we go for 8 to 10, when you were 8 to 10 years old, or thereabouts, I was like, is that right? And then I was been watching some Top of the Popses this week from when I was 12 or 13, and I was like, yeah, that's right, because I was, like, remembering being a horny 13-year-old, and I was like, yeah, we should probably not touch on any cartoons that a horny 13-year-old might have thought was great. How about you, Dwayne? Would you have watched this at 8 to 10 years old if it had been on?
Oh, well, I mean, like, I think so. If I could get away with titties, sure. but other than that, like, it's a really fun, adventure-y kind of romp. Like you say, like, I wouldn't consider it, like, top-tier Lupin, because when Lupin's great, it's fucking amazing. But this is just, like, standard Lupin, and, like, basic, like, not trying very hard, you did a good job Lupin is still, like, way above a lot of things anyway. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think it's, like, the triad character is, like, whenever I see one of those characters show up, internally groan.
Yeah, I really like the design of like Starmo and everything. Like, there were some really, I think in Alcatraz and stuff, there was really fun run animations with them, like where they really like leaned into the cartoon rubberiness of them. But then you see the Chinese stereotype also doing that, and it's like, there has to be something to ruin it.
You do get Lupin's bare ass when he like tears himself out of his own suit.
Oh, he tries to flex out of his own suit.
Yeah, it's ripped straight down the back.
Dear.
Yeah, it's not so much this particular instance of the Chinese stereotype. It's the fact that it's just a recurring thing with monkey punch. There's the same sort of character shows up in Cinderella Boy, like probably multiple other Lupin things.
Like, I didn't mind his gang, like the guys who showing up with nunchucks and flamethrowers. I'm fine with those guys.
It's just the fat Fu Manchu is a recurring bad guy.
The braid and everything.
And then the ending theme is Fairy Night by Sonia Rosa, who I looked up, and apparently they were a Brazilian-born singer and songwriter living in Japan.
Hmm.
Probably moved in the same jazz circles as Ono. Anyway, I think based on the other two things you guys got to summarize for, I think I got off lucky. Because next...
You're not joking. You are not joking.
...is Romance of the Three Kingdoms. Weirdly, I think Dwayne's got off luckier than Anthony has.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I was watching Dwayne's, I was thinking, oh, have fun with this one, Dwayne. And then I got to mine.
I didn't realize you were getting every single member of Star Trek introduced to you in the first episode.
Don't expect wonders, listeners.
So... Romance of the Three Kingdoms is a 14th century Chinese novel by Lo Guangzhong, or probably a better pronunciation. I did look online to try and get the pronunciation as best I can with my flat Lincolnshire syllables. and is the Romance of the Three fucking Kingdoms. It covers a period.
I feel like that's more well known than Lupin, which is saying a lot. Yeah.
Covering a period of over 100 years of Chinese history, it was adapted into comic form by Mitsuteru Yokoyama over 60 volumes, starting in 1971. You may know Mitsuteru Yokoyama from Giant Robo, and you may know some of the faces in this show from Giant Robo as well.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1991, 5 years after the end of the comic, TV Tokyo aired an adaptation produced by Dai Nippon Printing that ran for 47 episodes covering the Yellow Turban Rebellion up until the Battle of the Red Cliffs. And this episode originally aired on Friday, October the 18th, 1991. But what could we watch in the UK? I could not find a Den episode.
RTE's notoriously bad with their fucking archive stuff.
So, over in the UK, you could watch Pingu.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah, if I'd got home from school early enough, I may have watched Pingu as well.
If it was on right now, I'd watch it. Yeah.
Hang up the call.
So 91, I would have been 16.
So, were you, like, too cool for Pingu at that stage, or...?
No, but it might have been on too early for me to have got back from school at that point. That might be...
Right, right.
But no, definitely not too cool for Pingu. Then the Little Green Planet show. I have no recall.
Boring.
Today,
is it one of those, like, science shows or something?
I think
yeah?
so, yeah. Today, fossils, filters, film, and finally, finale. Then
alphabetical, I guess.
The Legend of Prince Valiant. A show that I think when I saw the title of, I was like, oh, I'll watch that. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, I'm not watching this again.
I remember it opened with him like fighting a dragon and I was like, this is rad. But then it just descended into like a love triangle and I was like, I'm sick of this.
based on the newspaper strip. Then we got Record Breakers. Cheryl Baker goes 200 feet up the side of one of London's tallest buildings to find mountaineer John Barry planning a leap into the unknown.
Plus, I used to love Record Breakers and stuff like that, so great stuff.
Roy Castle's still around at this point. Plus Antarctic explorer Jeff Summers and his Huskies in the studio. Then you've got News Round, Grange Hill... I may have been allowed to watch Grange Hill at this point. I probably was at 16. So more strictly speaking, my brother was allowed to watch Grange Hill at this point.
Which one's Grange Hill? Because my brain is like, Biker Grove. No. I was like, it's not Biker Grove.
No. Wow. It's the school. It's, secondary school.
Oh,
drama.
Yes. Yeah, I know the one.
As opposed to after school club drama.
Hmm.
Then, in the evening, they had an episode of Wogan, where the guest was Mariah Carey. Followed by Harry and the Hendersons, the TV spin-off of Bigfoot and the Hendersons.
Oh, I used to love this. I think I did anyway.
Not just because it was a TV show, I'm pretty sure I watched the TV show more than the movie, which was a mistake, I think, in hindsight. Oh, dear.
Yeah. I did not like this show. Don't think anyone in our family liked Harry and Meg.
I didn't realize it was John Lithgow.
In the film, not in the TV.
Yeah,
show.
Yeah, I'm just going with the, yeah, I remember the show.
Who was in the TV show?
It was a guy with a beard, and I know his face, but I can't think of who the hell he is.
Bigfoot, Dwayne?
No, the other guy.
Oh, wait, on this promo art, different... there's nobody with a beard. But...
Wait, is there a bald guy with glasses? I think I might be mixing them up with a different sitcom, Dad.
They're very clean shaven in this show, apart from...
Wait, is the dad in Family Ties? Does he have a beard? Have I combined those two sitcoms in my head?
It's Bruce Davison playing him, and Bruce Davison does currently have a beard, but don't think he had it then.
Right, right.
Then Last of the Summer Wine was almost 20 years old at this point.
Wow. Wow. I like Last of the Summer. That's something I could marathon, but if I happen to catch an episode from the beginning, I would sit through it.
Wait, if you like it, you should, assuming you're not watching already, you should watch Still Open All Hours, which is like...
Is that the re...
That's the sequel to Open All Hours, which has now gone on more episodes than the original. But it is like a weird, it's basically Roy Clark writing Open All Hours and Last of the Summer Wine and Keeping Up Appearances all at the same time, because it has elements of
appearances. Is that all the same writer?
Yes, they're all Roy Clark, yeah.
And they're a shared universe now, you're saying?
No, they're not a shared universe, but there's, he's got characters doing stuff that characters would be doing in all of those shows.
Okay.
I'm a big fan. I didn't realize it was all one person, but that's safe to say I would enjoy that show.
Yeah, well, there's five seasons on iPlayer you can watch.
Is that David Jason?
It is David Jason. He's the weakest part of the show.
I thought he was dead.
No, you'd know about it if he died. You wouldn't be able to, they'd be like tribute show, there'd be like a tribute weekend. That'd be so...
Yeah, you're right.
It'd be a week of mourning there, yeah. I would have thought. Yeah,
he's sure. Done some good stuff.
Mm.
On all channels.
Church of Frost.
Yeah.
Great.
Then finally, I would have watched Russ Abbott's show. Probably still, even at 16. Even with like a better tasting comedy at this point, I probably would have still watched the Russ Abbott show.
I don't know him. I know the name, but...
He was eventually in Last of the Summer Wine.
What was he called in that?
I can't remember. He was the milkman who claimed he used to be a spy.
Let's get a picture of him. Oh, yeah.
Looks familiar, yeah.
Yeah. Such a good feel-good show, Last of the Summer Wine. Like, you feel proud to be British to watch that show. I wish I lived somewhere like that for, like, just a week.
Home first. I can't imagine they have you can. It is there. It is a real place.
Yeah, but it'd be nice for a week, and then I think everybody would be too nice.
Well, you get the bus to Manchester.
Is that where it is? Is it?
Yeah, it's that direction. I've not been there, but I have been driven through it. Over on BBC Two in the early evening, you had a repeat of Thunderbirds. I don't know if this was the time of that popular Blue Peter make. Where you could make your, they were telling you how to make Tracy Island, which.
Oh, yeah.
Caused parents to go berserk. Then a repeat of the Phil Silvers show, a plug for Secret of the Sailor Madness.
Thanks.
And lurking at 1:50 in the morning, so technically the next day, was Eon Flux as part of a show called Mystery Train.
Yeah, but you'd have to stay up late enough to watch it. So I think that counts.
Even though it was on.
It's
a bit too weird for regular television.
Well,
I can't believe that's 1991.
Well, Liquid Television was 91. And that was on in the early evenings. So I don't know whether it was just one of the shorts from Liquid, which aired on Liquid Television. I don't know when the series was on.
Yeah, okay.
Series was 91, but later than this. So that was probably the shorts. Still. Number one, in the UK, was Everything I Do It For You by Bryan Adams, which I suspect every time we come back to 91, that will be the answer to what was the UK number one. In Ireland, the, Top of the Pops was Always Look on the Bright Side of Life by Monty Python.
Hey. Fantastic.
I wonder what kind of brought that to prominence and why it also didn't bring it to prominence in the UK at the same time.
Oh, I think it did because it wasn't it Simon Mayo playing it on his Radio 1 breakfast show, which got it in the charts. And then we've got episode 1 of Romance of the Three Kingdoms, The Peach Orchard's Oath, directed by Seiji Okuda. His only other actual, like, chief director roles are on Dan Cougar, the various Dream Hunter Rem OVAs, and Crystal Triangle. Screenplay for this episode is Jinzo Toriyumi, the creator of Keroko Debatan. Seiji Okuda is also the episode director and the storyboard artist. The animation director is Moriyasu Taniguchi, who did Leisner and lots of, I've described it in the notes, early meat and potatoes OVAs. You might recognize the name, but you wouldn't have sought them out to watch them. And the character design is by Michi Himeno, who worked on Saint Seiya and collaborated with the other character designer, Shingo Araki, ever since Cutie Honey. And our main characters are Daiki Nakamura playing Liu Bei, and I've picked like the most boring names of the other characters they've played. He played Dave in Zillion. You've got Keiji Fujiwara as Zhang Fei, who played Ron in BTX. Or as I like to call it, buttocks. Until we watch it, we'll have no way of knowing how it's pronounced.
I think you're right.
And Shinpachi Tsuji as Guan Yu, who is Lance in Appleseed Ex Machina.
Hey, Lance is a good, exciting name.
Well, it's more exciting than Dave and Ron, yes.
Yeah. Best of a bad
book. He was also Big Ear in Big O.
Big Ear?
Yeah, he's like the informer.
Oh, right.
The guy who was always reading the newspaper.
Yeah.
And we open with our theme tune, Toki no Kawa by Fence of Defense, a band who have apparently been around since 1985, but I couldn't find a English Wikipedia article. And that was the very last thing I was looking up before we started recording the show. But anyway, over to Dwayne. What happened in episode 1, The Peach Orchard's Oath?
We open up, like, it's Romance of the Three Kingdoms. Have you ever played Dynasty Warriors?
No. What's yes. Dynasty Warriors, Joanne?
It just opens up with, like, setting the scene, like, going, like, it's the year, what's it, 150 or something, 180? And it's talking about the yellow turbans and the kind of unrest in China at the fall of the Han Dynasty. And basically, like, more so locally, with these yellow turban guys just running around, just ransacking villages and whatnot. Besides that scene and the seeing mothers and children and peoples cut down, pretty horrible. You see the, it's just like, it starts kind of like a kung fu movie. It's in a restaurant and a bunch of guys are causing trouble. But they're actually looking for the yellow turban guys, and they assume the restaurant owner is harboring them or something. It's not exactly clear.
Do I think they're baddies as well?
I think they're looking for, looking for trouble as well. Sure. Yeah. They're probably looking for like shakedown money or something. They're not acting in very nice ways, certainly. But wouldn't you know it, a very big man with a very odd beard is there. It's Zhang Fei. I think he stands up and they're just like instantly like, oh, who are you? Because clearly you have a character design. We're kind of fucked. He looks like some sort of gigantic humanoid version of Sun Wukong kind of thing. But yeah, he proceeds to kick their ass. And they were looking to not pay for their food. That's why they were.
That was it,
fuss in the restaurant. Yeah.
Because
sure, after he kicks their ass, he's like, "Oh, my master will come along and pay for the damages." Bye. he was doing a dine and dash as well, so not that our hero, everyone.
Well, yeah, yes.
one of the heroes, yeah. I should say. Yeah, because then we get to meet our next hero, Guan Yu, who is looking for this, I thought he was looking for a specific guy, but he was looking for a guy who was born near, what kind of fucking tree? Or was living near a...
Oh, that's my doorbell.
Somebody tell him what kind of tree it was.
I can't remember. It's definitely one that has bears like fruit or something, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
And it's enormous, apparently.
Yeah, like, my brain's like a juniper berry, and I was like, junipers grow out of bushes, don't they? I don't know.
Oh, yeah,
I can't remember.
Can't be that.
Yeah, I can't remember what kind of tree it was, but it's a pretty big tree. Yes, the little girl's like, hey, do you know where there's like a tree in town? And he's like, oh, yeah, there's one over there. And he's like, oh, brilliant. The guy I'm looking for is probably near that. And I thought it was like he got the information that this guy's dress is across from that big tree. But this was like part of a legend that he was like, oh, this guy will be born next to a tree because the tree represents stateliness or something like that. And the little girl shows him to the place because it's her master, Liu Bei. Who he initially misconstrues as Liu Bei being, oh, you must be a student of Liu Bei's. And it's like, oh, you're so young and handsome and powerful looking. I thought you were the student, not the master. I've actually skipped a bit.
We'd already seen Liu Bei as well.
He hadn't got the character introduction and explaining his style name and all that stuff. up to this point, he'd ran into, or Zhang Fei ran into him. Well, he was going home to mother, on the run from the cops, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And he said, it's like, I'm going to fight you, because the guy nearly, flipped him with a little wrist action. But, this guy seems to be good at fighting. I'll fight him. It's like, after I run away from the cops. And also he said, I'm not going to fight you now, because you're bringing something home to your mam, and he appears to have some sort of hang up on mothers.
Even I was up on that at that point, and I don't get why he's like, why don't you want to fight? Are you scared to die? Like, yeah, I don't want to die.
And well, he's the cool, angry, drunky, fun, tough
True.
Guy.
True.
So I think it's gone for that. But obviously he has a heart of gold because he's like, I don't know, he obviously lost his mother or something like that from all of his actions.
Oh, I never
that
even
kind of
considered that. Yeah, you're right. You're
Because he keeps saying, it's like, does that mean you're like my man now when they become like sworn brothers? Because he's like, I would like that. That would be nice. He's really into the, he's not into the mother. He's into the idea of having a mother kind of figure.
It's nothing creepy.
Yeah, thank goodness.
I hope. I think.
It could be. It depends on which version of the fucking Romance of Three Kingdoms you go to, I guess. So he arrives at the house as well. He was also looking for this Liu Bei guy, and as soon as he realizes, after threatening to crush him with a big rock, because he sold his sword for booze money again, he realizes Liu Bei prostrates himself in front of him, and he's like, oh, you're the guy I'm looking for. And he's like, no, I don't do war and stuff like that, but, you know, you're welcome to hang out in the house. We'll all have a lovely time. Oh, no, the village is being attacked by the Yellow Turbans, and they kind of get to it. Liu Bei is incensed that his student's name, the little girl, her parents are killed by the bandits, and he takes up arms and starts cutting motherfuckers down. And
in front of
the
kid as well.
Yeah, like, oh. But I mean, like, it's the show. It's like, look, your parents are avenged. It's fine. I guess that's the idea behind it. But sure. With that, he's kind of like, and his mom convinces him as well that it's like, oh, we're not actually just lowly farmers. We're descended from, like, is it the emperor's uncle or something? I've forgotten exactly which way the family line works. Yeah,
no.
it's something like that.
It is, there is a mention of uncle at some point, but I can't remember which way around.
I thought he was the uncle, but maybe I might be mixing it up, like you said. But yeah, he is descended from royal stock, and he will right the world, and we need to gather together an armory, and we'll have a big ceremony where you become, sworn brothers. And also most of the villagers shown up who didn't die, and now you have an army and some cool generals, and we're ready to fucking go. Let's do it.
The mother put on a very large feast.
Well, I guess she knew the army was coming, because even the big guy who likes drinking and eating and fighting was just like, that's a lot of food. I don't think I can eat that. So I presume maybe some of the army are getting fed. I'm not entirely sure.
I hope so, yeah.
There's a nice spread put out, yeah.
Quite violent, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, like, anyone who gets cut down, you see, like, a shadow, but you do see, like, you know, people getting cut completely in two and that kind of thing. It's like, yeah.
Well, you don't romance three kingdoms without breaking a few eggs.
Yeah. I presume, like, you could watch the series and then start watching Redcliffe, because it leads right up to that, which is great. Oh, dear. I feel like I've seen this story many times, like not even a version of this or something based on this, like this story. But that's just because it's been done so many times. I did enjoy it though, just as a nice kind of setup, a nice introduction to the three characters. I feel like Zhang Fei comes across as the most likable. The other two guys are like, these guys are handsome guys, and one guy has that weird flat beard thing going on. But other than that, not really much to them, besides being honorable and righteous.
Good guys.
Yeah.
I got a little bit teary-eyed. I know you mentioned like the mother bit, but when they're like, oh, we're brothers now, and then even the little girl's like, does that make me your sister? And they're like, yeah. Of course. And they're like chucking her around and stuff, like she wears nothing. And then again,
they're gigantic.
Head, so they are very...
yeah, people. Two of them are gigantic, super-sized compared to Liu Bei.
Yeah, Liu Bei is like just taller than his man, but the other two guys are like easily two heads over him kind of thing. I did like their cool, like, tough guy three-arm interlocking thing they do. I was like, that's pretty rad.
I'm surprised people haven't used that for the unified opinions meme, to have it a three-way one.
Oh,
yeah.
You need to get on that, Brian.
I'm too old to be making memes.
You've made memes.
In the past, but not these days.
What is Mad Stravaganza if not meme?
Meme Stravaganza. Oh, that'll howl ruffle his feathers.
It will. It's not just that.
Dear.
I enjoyed this. I would watch this for sure as an 8-year-old.
As a kid or now?
I think I'm more likely to watch it as a kid than I am now.
Yeah, I'm
No, I'd admit that. Like, I assume there's better versions of the story since that I'd enjoy more now. But as a kid, I'd be just like, oh yeah, rad brothers fighting wars and shit. Yeah, it seems really up my alley.
I'm not sure there is in anime terms.
Oh no, but I mean, like, there's been so many film versions and whatnot. There's probably other versions of this that I'd enjoy more so than the series.
The music is very of its time.
My god, I fucking love that. The fucking, the saxophone and shit, that was great.
It reminded me of Enigma, because obviously we've just been watching JoJo's and we get Enigma at the end of every...
Right.
And I looked up the charts to pull out the UK number one, and they were in the top 10. And I was like, oh no, bang on the money.
Excellent.
It avoids like trying to do like COD Chinese music, I think. It's probably best to go this way rather than the...
Yeah, everything else is doing very traditional Chinese styles, and you know, like I said, your man's kind of reminds you of Son Goku with the little golden crown and everything. But like, the music really kind of took me out of it in a really fun way. It made me laugh anytime, but what sounded like porno music kicked in.
Yeah, I would have liked it as a kid. There's violence. But I don't think I would watch it now. I don't think it's bringing enough to the plate.
That's the thing. I've got so many other things I'd watch before it. But yeah, I think, now it's bugging me, because what was the BBC used to show like a serialized historical Indian drama, which I definitely watched for a period.
What, the BBC, like here?
Here, yes.
In this country?
You mean like a live action one?
Yeah, a live action one.
Mm. Not like Sandokan or something like that.
No, I'll watch Sandokan as well. That got watched as well, but that's a fiction.
Mm.
It's going to bother me now for the rest of the day that I can't pick it out. But no, so I think
I know kind of the thing you're talking about. I feel like I know specifically the one you're talking about, but the general kind of like, an epic, basically.
An epic, yes. Mm. And I think probably during one summer holidays, I watched some of that, and then until he realized it's going to go on forever. He says watching episode 800 or whatever it is of One Piece.
Some things are the exception, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is only 47, but episodes. But yeah, the thing is, like, I've played enough Dynasty Warriors. It seems terrible, but I'm dismissing this classic that survived centuries.
Well, see, like, the thing is, I said you could probably watch, like, Redcliffe, lead into Redcliffe with this, but I was like, you could just skip ahead and just watch, like, all the parts of Redcliffe, yeah. But just get some rad fucking giant fights in.
Righty-ho. Finally.
Oh, God, I'm nervous.
I sort of mentioned the ending theme was Sora by Memori Yusa. But, yes, finally, we go forward to 1996 for Martian Successor Nadesco, an original sci-fi anime from ZBEC. I think that's how that's pronounced. That aired on TV Tokyo for 26 episodes in 1996. It was followed by a comic in 1997, an OVA, some Sega Saturn games, and a movie. There was probably some audio drama CDs in there too, because it was 1996 after all, and we're now at the point where if you like something, you better have a lot of money to spend to prove how much you like it. And this one's particularly bad because there's like plot points to the movie which are only explained in the Sega Saturn games, I believe.
That's a dirty trick.
If you want to know the rest of the story, buy the Sega Saturn game.
The show follows the romance between aspiring chef and mecha pilot Akito Tenkawa and Yurika Misumaru, the captain of the Nadesco spaceship. Which is not to say that is what the show's about, but that's the through line on which to hang all the commentary about science fiction shows and the fandom of such science fiction shows.
Hmm.
And it originally aired on Tuesday, October the 1st, 1996, and we've already discussed what aired here on in episode 5, because Saber Marionette J also aired on that very same day.
Oh.
Go and listen to that episode.
And so,
doozy.
We have episode 1 of Martian Successor Nadesco, To Go Like a Man. The show overall is directed by Tatsuo Sato, who similarly worked on Bodacious Space Pirates and Stelvia, and completely unsimilarly directed Tokyo Tribe 2. The screenplay for this episode and the majority of the show is by Sho Aikawa, who we know from Full Metal Alchemist. Anthony knows him from Ungo, and I know him from Concrete Revolutio. Storyboard is also Tatsuo Sato. Episode director is Nobuyoshi Hibara, who would also direct Steam Detectives, Fafner, and Ape Escape. I'd forgotten there was an Ape Escape anime.
Well, that's something that we need to watch.
Yeah, I saw it on your list there, and I was like, wait, he directed the game Ape Escape?
No.
It was an anime? Okay.
I think he did something, he apparently did storyboards for Killer 7, that was mentioned on his Anime News Network encyclopedia page.
I wonder if it was that when they had to pick it up or before they had to speed up the production of that. Yeah.
Character design is by Keiji Goto, who also probably best known for this, but also known for Gatekeepers. But the original character design's by Kiya Asamiya, who's probably most famous for Silent Mobius, but also did the aforementioned Steam Detectives. And animation director for this episode is Keiji Goto himself. Our two leads are Hayuko Kuwashima in her debut role playing Yurika, and she is also lots of Toei stuff. She's Cure Sunshine from Heartcatch Pretty Cure, and she's also the voice of Going Merry whenever Going Merry spoke, which was, I think, mainly whenever they do something when going, we have those scenes when Going Merry's dying and saying goodbye to them.
Don't get upset.
I know. It's the thing which makes me cry every time I see it in whatever form I see it in.
Brian, it's okay. Its spirit continues to live on in the thousands.
That's true, yes. Or in the little, the little mini.
The little, Merry. Going Merry boat, yeah.
And, but yeah, the fact it happens in Blooming Dynasty Warriors games versions. And I'm like, boo-hoo-hoo-hoo, but it's not when it's dying. It's not when it's dying. I always point this out. It's not when it's dying which makes me sad. It's when they all leap off, the pier during the buster call, and then Going Merry emerges from the sea to rescue them all. And I can't talk anymore because I'll start to go again. Right, Yuji Uida plays Akito. We've seen him as Pensuke in Gagmanga Biori, the penguin high school detective.
Oh, I was going to ask. I can't remember who that is, but now I can.
Now you can. And probably most famously, he is Takeshi in Pokemon, the character we know as Brock.
I didn't know there was a different name.
Yeah, they all have different names.
Well, I had my mind blown with this with Yu-Gi-Oh! As well. I always thought just Joey would be Joey. It's not. Anyway. Yeah.
And our theme song is You Get to Burning by Yumi Matsuzawa.
This is my first time hearing that song, but I must say it's quite good.
It is really good.
No, it's a banger, all right.
Anthony, tell us what happens in episode one of Martian Success in Nadesco.
It'd be easier if I said what didn't happen. Less stuff going on. I've actually got a lot of notes. I was like, kept pausing. I was like, I'll have to make a note of this. I'll try. So I'm going to try and keep it as brief as I can, but kind of cover it at the same time. So
yeah, I got lucky. I just had to make notes for like three names. That was good.
Yeah, and I'm the worst with names. I struggle with names.
Same.
All the time. So I may refer to them as the main character, the other main character.
Akito anyway, is your main character.
Akito and Eureka, yes. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, we're there. We're on board. So the series opens like all these kind of shows do, and I always open and think, a big space battle, and it's like setting the scene. These are the aliens. These are the guys that you're going to be following. And they're on Mars, and there's a group of civilians, I guess, post this battle that's just gone up and in space. And anyway, there's these civilians in an underground shelter, and it's getting attacked by one of these robot drone alien thing. I don't know whether there's aliens inside. There's not a lot to go off at this point, but presumably it's just a drone that's controlled elsewhere. The protagonist, as we've learned, is Akito. He kind of plays the hero after seeing this lovely little girl offer him an orange, I think it is, and this alien thing bursts through the wall and he jumps on them to stop them from getting damaged, well hurt because they're humans. And he drives this forklift and like kind of pushes it against the wall and starts crushing it. And you see this weird symbol on his hand and you think, oh, what's this? And he's got this blue, a blue jeweled pendant on his neck. And, just as he's about to kill it, he kind of sees this vision of this unknown, female. And, he manages to kill this robot, destroy it, whatever else. And just as he's doing this, the other survivors, the civilians, kind of getting out of this sealed door. And as the door opens, there's like a ton of these robot things and they all die. And I was like, whoa, that's a little, heavy hint just to, like, to start with. And I was like, ooh, this could be good. Anyway, the, cut to the, I guess, the present day, and, the government is enlisting, don't know on what purpose, because I was like trying to keep up as they were going through it, but there's like this one dude who, he's like, no, I don't want to do it, but they show him like this big wad of, like this number on a calculator or something. He's like, oh, is
well,
that?
They try to get him with like girls, and it's like, yeah, there'll be lots of young women you can recruit.
Yeah.
But your man calculates what his salary, I guess, will be or something.
And then he's on board. So they're kind of going around collecting these, I guess, you know, people who excel in their field, but they're all kooky and zany. Like, there's this dude who, he's working from a garage and presumably doing illegal stuff. He's like, oh, don't look. And it's like a female droid. And
it does have robot breasts. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So make of that what you will. And he's like, I don't care how much you're going to give me. I just want to go. I want to leave these two. And presumably it's his wife and child.
It is, yes.
So, obviously, I'll...
They seem kind of sick of his shit at this stage to give them... They might be better off.
Yeah, yeah. So he joins them. There's a few others that we get introduced to. And we jump back to Akito at this point, and he's in a restaurant, and there's, like, people eating food, and they're watching the TV, and then there's a battle going on in the sky, and it interrupts the TV signal, and everyone's just so kind of chilled out about it, and like, oh, the signal's gone. And you hear some guy, "Where's my stir fry?" or "Where's my food?" And it goes to the back in the kitchen, and Akito's there, and he's frozen up because, you know, he's still a bit shell shocked, presumably from the events from the beginning, and he just starts screaming, and he's like, "Oh, I'm burning the food." That, I need to preface this because I'll watch the dub. It's like, oh, there's a dub for this. I thought I'd give it a shot because, you know, okay, if I was a kid, I would have watched it dubbed. And he gets the sack. He gets fired. But the guy who sacks him, he's a top guy. He gives him, like, 2 weeks' salary. Like, would places do that? Or would they just be like, get out?
I mean, like, yeah, I think, like, he's firing him because the guy has PTSD, which is pretty yes. much a dick move. But he is, like, going, like, I'm not going to fucking throw you out in your ass because you have PTSD. Yeah. That kind of would be a shitty thing to do.
It is, it is. So, yeah, he seems like a... I mean, he'd even be nicer if he kept him on the job, but, you know.
get him into therapy. That's what you
want. Yeah, you know, help him on. Mm. But it's, like, I was... maybe overthinking it at this point. I was thinking, like, oh, so it's normalized for all the normal, like, all this people, and
this is not a show you can overthink, because
right, okay,
as complicated as you think this episode is, when you get to the end of the series, there's more complications in this episode than you realized.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Wow. That's interesting. So I was like, I was on board at this point. I was enjoying, like, seeing all these, like, new characters. I thought, oh, these are going to be quite interesting, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I think he's cycling home or cycling somewhere. Oh, no, sorry, post this. Apologies. I'm jumping ahead for a moment here. So we see there's a dude stood outside of someone's bedroom, Eureka, who we learn is the, I guess, the other main character. She's getting changed into her uniform for this government scheme that they're going on. And her father's like, come on, hurry up. We've got to go. Or, you know, that kind of thing. They're rushing her. And he barges in and they both see her getting dressed. And the father's like super proud that she's blossomed into this, you know, young woman. She's a woman now. He's proud of her. Anyway, so yeah, so that's how we get introduced to that character. So, Akito's riding home or riding somewhere, and there's this car and the luggage, like the, what do you call them? What do you call a case?
Suitcase.
Yeah. Suitcase gets chucked out of the back of the boot, and it kind of knocks him off his bike, and it's like bras and knickers and all that kind of stuff. She gets out, she apologizes, and she's like, don't I know you? Like, I'm sure there's a connection between us here. And he's like, nope, not at all. And anyway, he's like, oh, you need to learn how to pack better and all this stuff. And he helps her pack. And as they're driving off, he picks up this photograph that's on the floor. He turns it over, and it's him as a child with her. He's like, oh, that's where I know her from. And he says her name, blah, blah, blah. And he speeds after her, and... busy there at this government facility, they're getting, you know, shown around and all that stuff, and the security guard's like, oh, there's this nut job at the front gate, blah blah blah. And in the dub, it's hilarious because the security guard's got this like very fake Irish accent, and he's going like, oh, he's an absolute loony, and I was just crease laughing. I found that funnier than everything else in the episode, to be honest. Anyway, they let him in. They introduce him to the boss of this scheme. Not the coach dude, but this guy with a tash. And he's like, well, why are you here? And he's like, oh, well, I need to find out what happened in Mars and how I got back to Earth. And he's like, all right, okay. I can see you're a pilot from that symbol on your hand. And he's like, no, I'm not a pilot. I'm not a pilot. He's like, well, what are you? And he's like, oh, I'm a kook. And so they welcome him as the kook on the Nadesco spacecraft. excuse me. And then we see he's kind of walking around, looking around, and we get introduced to this guy called Guy Daigoji. I think
yes. That's not his real name, because that's just the name he wants to use.
Yeah.
Yeah, your man looks at his passport and is like, that's not your fucking name. He's like, that's a temporary name.
And he's just like over-the-top blowhard pilot, and he's in this mech, and he's like, because he's obsessed with this thing called Geki Gengar.
Geki Genga 3.
Ah, right, okay. And he's like shouting out all of its moves, and he's like doing all these stances in the robot, blah, blah, blah. And I think when he jumps out of the robot, he breaks his leg.
Yes.
Oh, he breaks.
He treats the like regular robot as if it's a super robot, and as if he could jump down from the height of a mech and do a cool landing without breaking your fucking foot.
Because he looks the part.
Like,
yeah.
If you saw a picture of him, he's like, "Oh, that's the lead. He's the dude."
He thinks he's the main character too.
Yeah, he does. He does. And he tells Akito, because he's like, "Oh, you up there? Go into the pod and get out my Geki Gengar model, my figure." And he goes in, and just as he goes into the pods, the enemy attacks. And they're like, that's when we first see Eureka kind of get introduced as the leader. She's like the general of the ship, the Nadesco ship. And she comes out and she's giving orders. And there's like this one dude who's a bit dubious about it all. He, you know, he doesn't really trust her abilities, but she sounds like she knows what she's doing. And,
like she knows what she's doing is the problem.
No, because she steps out from the, and she's like, does like a peace sign, and she's like this big over the top introduction for herself.
She thinks, I've got them all on my side now, and then we used to get all their internal monologues saying, a fee sign? What a fucking idiot.
Well, yeah, in the Japanese, she kind of comes out and goes, fee! Kind of thing. They're all like, are you fucking serious? And she's like, I'm the captain.
But she's good. Like, she has this plan to essentially have a diversion so they can get the ship out of this. Whatever. I can't remember exactly, but
it was like they wanted to launch attacks on the attacking fleet, but that would hit their own people. So she's like, okay, if we launch and get up behind them, we can get behind them, but we'll need a distraction in order to fill the launch it at sea, basically. So they have to fill it full of water the entire tunnel first before they can launch that way. That's or something right. like that, so there is a time budget, basically.
And it sounds like a great plan, and the diversion they use is this robot which has Akito sat in it. So they send it out, I think he kind of converses with them over the stereo, or, you know, like the speaker system, whatever, like, you know, like the face cam thing. And Guy Daigoji's like, get out of my ship! Get out of mine, and be careful with the toy! Kind of thing. And he gets out, and he can pilot a ship. You know, he kind of knows what he's doing. He's running away at first, and then the mech's kind of got this like rocket arm that kind of pulls back in on a chain, and it's pretty cool, actually. I was quite
the plates
that
go over the fist so it can punch you harder. I was like, that's some fun design.
It's a pretty good, it's pretty badass, to be honest. And they lead it away, and he's fighting, destroying a few. Anyway, the plan works out, and, you know, he comes back in. And he's back on the face cam thing, and he's like, I need to, Eureka, it's me, and she remembers him, they remember each other, and essentially he's saying, I need to ask you something, and she's like, oh, he loves me, he wants to marry me, and all this stuff, and he's like, no, I just want to know something, and she's convinced that it's like a romance thing, but no, in fact, he just wants to know about his past. And that's kind of how the episode ends. He's the chef, but doing pilot's work, because he's got this symbol on his hand and all that stuff.
Yep, yeah. And that's not even all the characters introduced in this episode.
Oh, no, I mean...
yeah.
There's, like, a whole bunch more pilots. There's the ship scientist to come in.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, I was kind of... If I was just watching this without having to talk about it, I'd feel it's a lot more manageable.
Yes.
I'm trying to kind of put this across. So much going on. And I'm trying to kind of, like, cause the characters seem interesting enough.
Yeah.
But I think it's the humor. Like, some of it was quite amusing, but I think it's laid on too thick.
The rapid fireness didn't work.
I don't know whether I like this. I don't know whether I like it.
Yeah. I mean, there's dramatic reasons why they lay it on quite so thick.
See, I know you've spoke about this show in the past, and I know you speak quite highly of it, I think. And I kind of want to try more of it, but from this first episode, it was a ride, and it was good at times, but I don't know. I think there's lots of shouting going on, over-the-top characters. But yet, at first, I liked the fact that all these idiots were coming together, and it seemed reasonable. but maybe it's too much. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the sort of, the it's a lot more like a Star Trek type show than you'd think.
An ensemble cast kind of thing.
Yeah, in that there's like individual episodes where it's like, it's this character's turn to shine rather than necessarily.
Like in this episode, everyone gets recruited and everyone gets like a funny one-liner, or they get to comment on the things that are happening. Yes. So it goes like, here's this character, here gives you a rough idea what they're like.
Yes.
Which I was all about. That aspect, I think, if they kind of ran with that, and as you say, if further episodes are more character-based, I think I'd probably enjoy it.
I mean, it's still comedy all the way through, but it's like, yeah, the mechanic running off away from his wife and child is played for comedy in this episode, but if I remember correctly, there's an episode where that's kind of like addressed his behavior.
There's no point. I thought the comedy was bad because I laughed at a few bits. But would I have watched it as a kid? I think so.
Yeah.
I think I would have watched it as a teenager more than a kid, if that makes sense. I feel like a lot of the kind of the rapid pace and everything would have been a little over my head as a kid. Does that make sense?
I think I would have accepted, being a kid, I think it would have been over my head, but I'm still just watching a cartoon. So I think I would have accepted
if it's robot
that
fights,
aspect.
Then I might just watch it for that. Sure. But I feel like I'd be missing out on a major part of it.
I get you, yeah.
I feel like the accountant character is based.
Dude with the little mustache.
Yeah, he looks like, what's his face out of Giant Robo? I think he's also a character out of Romance of the Three Kingdoms. The strategist guy from Giant Robo.
Oh God, I can't think of the names.
No, I can't remember either. I love this show. I watched this episode and then I watched the following three episodes.
I was tempted, but I didn't want to go beyond this one. I've only seen like a few of these intermittently. I don't really remember watching them. I feel like I've watched the Gekiganger movie.
Yeah, the OVA is them going to the movies to watch the Gekiganger movie and then being annoyed that it's a compilation movie and there's not much new animation in it.
It's pretty great.
It's funny you mentioned that kind of like fourth wall break and, or like the fact that these are actually real people in a sense, you know, they're living essentially in a world where they,
like,
other
the world has its rules, there's an overarching plot, but like it's very much so taking the piss out of a lot of sci-fi anime type tropes.
Yeah. Because when I was watching it, and they introduced the new characters who they're kind of recruiting, there's some of them doing voices in like a voice booth.
One of them is a voice actress.
And I was like, oh, hold on, is this not real? Because I don't know the extent of anything of this show, and I was like, oh, maybe it's, and then I realized, no, they're actually just, it's just their job.
Yeah, it's, this
Which
is...
done in a clever way, actually. It's,
yes.
A good cut.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You don't know the half of it, mate. You don't know half of how deep it goes into the well. That is just scratching the surface. Because
the thing that doesn't put me off watching all of this is 20 something episodes, 26 or so.
Yeah, there's like a big, I want to say it's directly halfway, but it's probably a little earlier than that. But there's like a big seismic shift in the plot around halfway.
Okay. So I think this is what you've referenced in the past, but whenever you've been about to do it or you've addressed it, I'd be like, no, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I still think I stand by that. Even though I wasn't in love, I still don't think I want to know. Just in case.
I would say the subsequent episodes that I watched don't look quite as nice animation wise as this one. This one is.
Oh, you gotta like get them hooked at the start. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like just, there's flair where there's not even flair needed. It's like when Akito is like activating him with that hand thingy. He just like puts an extra bit of polish on his art, an extra bit of movement as he's pracing it down. It's like, yeah, that's great. That's a movement you would not actually do in real life, but it looks great as a cartoon.
I mean, like they had like a missile circus come out of that guy's sex robot. Yeah, this show was really showing off. Oh, dear.
Yeah, and the part of the plot is basically the government have basically farmed out the defense of Earth to this private company.
The privatized Earth Defense.
Yes. Nurgle-heavy.
I figured that's the way they were going with it. Yeah. Which is why you're ending up with so many fucking weirdos rather than professionals.
Yes.
But yeah. They do seem good at what they do.
Yeah, yeah, but no one would hire them because of the personality conflicts, I think, is the problem. Yeah.
And one of them is a 12-year-old girl they bought from some scientists.
What? Is she not a robot? Because I'm kind of weirded out by that.
Is that the one with the silver hair?
Yeah, that's Ruri, the one who calls everyone idiots.
Yeah, yeah, that's her catchphrase. She only says it like twice, I think, in this show. But I figured that, oh, she's only saying her catchphrase, so that's probably it.
Yeah, it's like, it's really late in the series before they explain what her deal is.
Okay.
And then she's the main character in the film. Yeah, I'm trying to think that's what I have to say about this beyond that I really liked it and I should probably watch it again. I've got it on Blu-ray. I've got it on DVD. Mm. I no longer have it on VHS.
I watched the Japanese. How is the dub?
It was alright, but it's a lot of shouting. I don't know whether that's the same in Japanese, but yeah, there's a lot of shouting.
Well, is it only
shouting in the shouty scenes, I guess?
Or just guy shouting?
No, it's the main character mainly.
Yeah, I guess.
So. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think it was fine. But I don't know. I think I'm intrigued more than anything else. I think I kind of am intrigued.
Yeah. With all this Evangelion talk we've had this year with it going up on Netflix.
Right.
This is the thing I prefer over it because...
Well, it's a fun deconstruction, isn't it?
Yeah, because it has characters who are aware of the genre that they're in. Whereas Evangelion is like clearly... This is made by people who are super fans. Where Nadesco
they established in Nadesco that there are super robot shows and there is anime and there's an entire industry there. It's like this is the world in which the fiction exists in it. Whereas in Evangelion, there is no Ultraman series.
Yes.
Because they would fucking cop on if there was.
Yeah, I think there's a character who shows up later on and he explains that he watched different types of giant robot shows to Akito and that's why he has a far bleaker vision of the world.
Oh, he watched like one of the darker guns.
Yeah, he watched Gundam. Yeah, it's basically intimated.
Okay.
That was his favorite anime show growing up as opposed to these super robot ones.
See, I like that because it's always like whenever you're, like, it's a weird thing in fiction when you're watching, in anything, let's say it's like the new fucking Sherlock show that they did, like in that world, they obviously don't have the books of Sherlock Holmes and that kind of thing. And I was like, well, what knock-on effect does that do for investigative detective work and that kind of thing? And it just makes me ask too many fucking questions. And even it's just like, in this very anime world, they don't have anime. And it's like, no, in this one they do. And I was like, okay, that's fine. That makes sense. Now I'm fine with
it. Of course, not as bizarre as Fascicloid. Where they drink a potion which turns them into cartoon characters. And then another character drinks a potion which will turn him from stop being a cartoon character into a real person.
Mm.
But then just turns him into like a drawing of the real person.
And it's freaky and it's weird. And
yeah.
You don't like looking at it.
But yeah, that was a wonderful joke, a wonderful episode in a second season that is a bit variable.
Mm.
Righty-ho! I would have watched this as a kid, by the way. Yeah.
Mm, okay.
For sure. I think the idea of serialized stuff, I enjoyed. I love Dog Tanyan. But, I mean, what's it called? Mysterious Cities of Gold. That's the one people around my age always like. Okay, Mysterious Cities of Gold. I always found that too slow. And I think I would have much preferred the pace of this.
Oh god, it feels fast.
Yeah.
Mm.
It really does.
Because I guess Samurai Pizza Cats would have been a little after I was the age we pick, but, that's got that same sort of manic animation and that was right up my street. And this is nowhere near as manic as Samurai Pizza Cats is, but
Well, I think it's kind of different from Mysterious City Gold because that's going with like old school, like kind of like a sedentary pace, but towards adventure, where
yeah.
everything's big and grand and slow about doing those things, whereas this is an action show, right?
It's very definitely a science fiction show. It feels like an action show in this
okay.
episode.
Okay, fair enough.
It's one of the shows which feels the most like a traditionally written science fiction show that I've seen in anime.
Okay.
Particularly some of the episodes where they get guest writers in.
And it feels different for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Space Dandy is the other one, bizarrely. If you ignore like the animation aspects of Space Dandy, the writing style of it is very Star Trek-y. When we're talking about TV science, and when we're talking about TV science fiction writing, we're talking about anthology shows or anthology shows which are in disguise mm-hmm. as a serial. Whereas this definitely has a serial story to it, but it does have those guest episodes which, and the episodes where they like focus on somebody's character more than the plot.
Yeah, so there's I've seen this discussion doing the rounds lately of like anthology versus, one-shot kind of episodes. I kind of like a combination where the characters do change slowly over time, but you can basically mm-hmm. jump in anywhere and have a fun time or an interesting time or a good setup for a one-off story, but that does lead into other stuff. But yeah, obviously Star Trek did that pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. This definitely is taking its cue with the vast amounts of, bridge staff that you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that they all get a lot more personality to them than, say, I would say the cross bridge staff do. Because they're all messed up individuals. As you watch the show goes on, it's probably a really bad idea to privatize your Earth defense and then just hire voice actors and ex-girlfriends.
Oh, dear.
Righty-ho, that wraps up another episode of the Anime That Didn't Make Us. Before we go, Dwayne, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me on Secret of the Stellar Madness, that podcast. I was going to say .blogspot.com, and we're on iTunes and all that kind of jazz. And I'm on Twitter at I'm on Twitter at @I_M_D, and I'm on Tumblr at @IAmOftenWrong, but I haven't updated that in ages.
Anthony.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitch and Twitter, which is just @AntAskYou. That is it.
And you find me on Twitter at @Awesome_Engine. I haven't changed it to Brian off that fella yet. And you can find me at Let's Go Brian on Twitch. And if you're at Hobaticon, you can see me doing three panels there. Brain-melting anime, mass extravaganza, and year's best anime. So see you there, because it'll be a winter. Goodbye. It'll be a winter con, which will probably still feel like summer due to apocalyptic weather. We'll see you there.
And because there's no summer con.
That's true as well.
Habana's going to be good, though.
Yeah, should be. Well, speak to you soon. I don't know when the next podcast will be out, because I'll say me and Anthony are ships passing in the night over August. So it might not be till September that you get another episode from us, or I may wrestle something together with Anthony in the meantime.
I'll cry.
But unlikely.
Brian cries over the going merry.
Because of that bank holiday weekend being early. I think that's thrown a spanner.
When
in
is
the
bank holiday weekend? What's
it is the 20? It'll be the 26th of August is the bank holiday Monday. Oh,
amazing!
I booked the rest of the week off.
Ooh, have you?
I have, because I've got wrestling to go to on the Saturday, and I might be tempted to go to the wrestling on the Friday as well.
Nice.
And but not the wrestling on the Sunday, because I think that's sold out.
That's too much wrestling.
That would be too much wrestling. Possibly too much. Too much being in London as well.
That's more of a problem.
Rightio, we'll speak to you soon, dear listener. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.